Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. We're just going to hop right into it. No fluff. I'm very excited to have my guest, Seth Goldman, on to talk about his sustainability journey and his company, Eat the Change. Seth founded Honest Tea, co-founded Plant Burger, and is chair of the board of Beyond Meat. And now he's co-founded Eat the Change, a sustainable snack line with, I do have to say, my biggest Top Chef crush, Spike Mendelsohn. Seth, it's an honor to have you here today.
Thanks, Amy. Great to be with you.
So I didn't really bury the lead. I kind of gave away the punchline there, and I began to list off a bunch of professional markers for you, but let's rewind and start at the beginning. Walk me through your professional roadmap a bit, and where do you think sparked your passion for sustainability?
Sure. Yeah. I majored in government in college. I thought I was going to be involved in politics, and that would be my way to try to influence issues I care about. And I did work on Capitol Hill for a while and worked on some different campaigns. But the more I was around that, I felt like, it feels like change is slow and it goes back and forth. So I wanted to get a little more into the arena. And I was actually running a nonprofit program in Baltimore when I realized if I had management skills, that might enable me to scale things more powerfully. And so I ended up going to the Yale School of Management. And when I was there, I got exposed to this whole world of, a whole approach to business where you could try to have a mission-driven business. Think about a public mission that you care about, whether it's the environment or public health or economic opportunity, and then create a for-profit model to address it. And if you do that right, it becomes sustainable, self-sustaining, and obviously scalable as well. And so I then got involved in what was called socially responsible investing. And I did that for a few years. And the more I got exposed to that, the more I got exposed to the entrepreneurs who were building these types of businesses. And I said, that's what I wanted to do. And so without really any experience in the beverage business, in 1998, I left the investment world to launch Honest Tea out of my house. And it was a very humble beginning. I basically had five thermoses and an empty Snapple bottle that I pasted a label on. And I was fortunate that my co-founder was my professor from business school, Barry Nailbuff, and managed to get an appointment with Whole Foods. And I brought the samples of tea that Barry and I had brewed in my kitchen. And I told the buyer we wanted to sell, a lightly sweetened tea in his store, his stores. They had 17 stores in the Mid-Atlantic. And that was enough to get us up and running. He gave us that try, and then we just continued to scale the business. And really, for the next 21 years, I was involved with Honest Tea, leading its growth, eventually selling to Coca-Cola, and then worked with Honest Tea and Coca-Cola for really, I guess, 11 years. While I was doing that, I got involved in some other entrepreneurial undertakings, and that's when I got exposed to Beyond Meat, which was really exciting for me because my family's been vegetarian for a long time, but always a little disappointed with the offerings I was striving to do. I knew that if they succeeded, it would be a wonderful thing, not just for my family, but for the world. And so I became a board member and then executive chair of the board. And then just about a year ago, stepped back from the role of executive chair and shifted to just chair. And that enabled me to launch a new enterprise. And that's what Eat the Change is. We call it a chef-crafted, planet-based snack company. And so we're trying to make delicious foods that have really incorporated a planet-based agenda. And so everything's organic. Everything is made with plant-based foods, or in this case, mushroom-based foods, because those are also very light on the environment, and then also nutrient dense. And so we're having a lot of fun. Our first product line is a line of mushroom jerky, and we've got some other innovations we'll be launching as well.
I love what you said about, you know, the mission-driven business. But in addition to Eat the Change, obviously having the planet-friendly mission, there is a big emphasis. And a lot of times in some of these snacks, you are kind of sacrificing flavor for the mission, but not here because it's chef-crafted.
Right.
How did you hook up with Spike Mendelsohn?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So it's often the case, and I, you know, learned this through my years, that the mission, whenever you talk about organic and mission oriented, it often, people hear it and think it means less tasty. And so, you know, that ultimately, when you're a food company, taste is critical. You can't sell something that is going to save the world, but doesn't taste good, because people won't buy it. It won't save the world. So Spike and I had actually met at a conference back in 2017, and I had snuck some Beyond Burgers under his chair and said, you know, you got to try these. And he got excited about that and said, hey, we could make a restaurant all focused on planet-based foods. And that was interesting to me, but I had never been in the restaurant business before. And I also had these other businesses I was involved with. So we just started talking. And then he ended up launching Planet Burger, and I helped support from behind the scenes, but I wasn't officially a founder. My wife was a co-founder, and my son was a co-founder, but I was always involved with what they were doing. And so we really started to enjoy working together. And when I shifted into that, away from being an executive chair and away from being involved with Coca-Cola, that freed me up. And so I got involved as a co-founder with Planet Burger as well. And then we just started playing around with different tastes and flavors. And I realized he was such a wonderfully creative chef. It was the perfect complement to, you know, although I've been in the food business now for more than two decades, I like eating food and drinking drinks, but I would never profess to be a talented chef in any way. So I needed one.
So the first package product, like you mentioned, was the mushroom jerky.
Right.
And in addition to the five different flavors that it comes in, the snack also adheres to your five plant-based commitments of the company. Can you walk us through those?
Sure. Yeah. So we really wanted to make sure we could have in everything we sell, you know, make sure we're really embracing all, trying to make it as environmentally and climate friendly as possible. So the first thing is, of course, plant-based. The environmental footprint of a plant-based food versus an animal-based food is just significantly different, because when it's animal-based, you have to feed the animal. So you're growing all these crops to feed the animal. And of course, the yield on it is not direct. And so everything's plant-based or fungi-based. The other thing we do with all of our products is get them to be organic certified. So with organic certification, it means there's no chemical pesticides or chemical fertilizers going into the ecosystem or going into our bodies as we grow these products. And we think that's a critical commitment. Then we're also, and this is sort of, this I haven't seen other companies do this, but we really wanted to support biodiversity. So we had to think about, how do we make this product really, you know, embrace biodiversity? Because that's a value that, you know, you may see a company say, oh, we support the rainforest. They'll donate some money to a charity. But we wanted it to be part of our, in the package, in the product. And so the way we approached that was when we were looking at the supply chain, we learned that there were six crops that account for 57% of all agricultural production. And so that means our whole agricultural system is not very well diversified. It's almost a monoculture, you know, with such reliance on those crops. And that's not good for, it's not good for our food system to have that much dependence on certain crops, because all you need is a climate shock or a disease to kill one of those crops, and all of a sudden we're, you know, endangered the way we eat. But it's also not good because it doesn't support, you know, biodiversity has a direct correlation with resilience. And so the more resilient, it means, you know, with one part of your, it's like cross-training for the body. If one part of your body gets injured or is weak, there's a strength in other muscles or other parts of the body to build it up. And if we only rely on basically, you know, six muscles or six crops, we don't have that resilience. So we said, we're going to formulate our foods and we're going to avoid all of those crops. And these, you know, it's soy, corn, wheat, potatoes, rice, and sugarcane. So these are, you know, not surprising, those products are in almost everything we eat, or also in a lot of the different flavorings. So for Spike, you know, as a chef, he looked at it as that Top Chef challenge. It was sort of what was in the basket, cook it without these ingredients. And he found a way to do that. And then the other thing we wanted to do was to make sure we could avoid food waste. And so for us, that means finding what we call imperfect produce. So, you know, mushrooms that may be too big or too small or bruised or the stems, we can use all of those in the jerky. It doesn't really matter to the consumer. And that's a great way to avoid food waste. And then the last thing is thinking about packaging. How do we make our packaging as lightweight and as efficient or recyclable as possible? So those are the different commitments.
So I want to go back to the imperfect produce. You know, we've actually, you know, have a lot of companies on that upcycle, you know, bruised or damaged produce. And I wanted to talk about your impact in upcycling. What kind of environmental ROI have you seen?
Well, we don't have a specific number, but, you know, what we're doing is taking mushrooms that would not normally make it to the grocery shelf. So we use portobello and cremini mushrooms. And when you go to the grocery store, if you want to buy portobellos, they're always those perfectly round caps that fit so neatly on a bun. But of course, most of the mushrooms grown don't fit that neatly on a bun. And so those mushrooms that don't fit that way, they're not thrown out, but they're often put in a soup stock or just in a much lower value usage. And for us, you know, those mushrooms are perfectly edible. It's just their appearance isn't great. Well, you know, when you're smoking them and then cutting them up to make a jerky, it doesn't really matter what look they started at. So for us, it's just fine.
No, that makes sense. And I think, you know, like I assume one of Spike's strengths is coming up with those unique flavor profiles. What was that trial and error process like?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was great because I set them loose in the kitchen. I said, make the most delicious jerky you can find. Just period. Don't even worry about organic. Don't worry about this constraint around ingredients. Just makes the most delicious blends you can. And he did exactly that. And then I said, okay, now we've got these taste profiles. Now, can we get everything sourced with organic ingredients? And we could. And in many cases, it actually improved the taste even more because the organic ingredient might be a little more crafted or a little more intense flavor. And then I said, okay, now let's just figure out how we get rid of these six ingredients. And that was a little more work. And then on top of it, we said, well, you know, if we want to be like jerky, we've got to smoke it just like they smoke the meat. And so we found this place that does meat jerky. They use hickory wood to smoke it. And so we were able to do the same. And that just imparted a whole extra layer of flavor that made it taste, you know, even better.
That's awesome. I've noticed through doing like over 100 of these episodes that the most passionate environmental companies that I've spoken to, they all have a social and community impact component. And Eat the Change is no different. So talk to us a little bit about the Eat the Change Impact Program.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we really want to be part of a movement. What we're trying to do is shift people's diets to a planet-based diet. And so obviously what we're doing with Eat the Change, the company, is we've got
our products. And you're saying planet, not plant, right? There's a differentiator.
Correct. Well, because we initially did say plant-based, and then we realized, well, mushrooms are not plants. Mushrooms are their own separate kingdom. So we have to call it planet-based. That's better because it's really a whole, rather than to say plant-based diet, a planet-based diet actually also, you know, talks about the mindset behind that diet. And so what we can do with our selling our product is one thing, but we need to get people's mindsets shifted as well. And that's bigger and broader work than just selling a product. Because if you don't have a population that's attuned to planet-based eating, they're never going to look for a planet-based food. So we said, let's find organizations that are helping raise awareness about planet-based diets. And let's look all across the United States. Let's find, especially in communities that may not be thought of as, you know, friendly to planet-based diets, and so may not have exposure to planet-based diets, may not have access to certain ingredients or to certain recipes. And so we have, over the 3 years, are giving out more than $1 million to these different organizations. And we've just found amazing and really inspiring entrepreneurs and nonprofits that are really democratizing planet-friendly diets. And so it's been wonderful to find and work with these partners. And we just announced those grants last month. And, you know, we'll do it again next year as well. But those are great partners. And it's everything from, you know, little community gardens to school programs that are really helping, you know, connect students to plants. There's a wonderful entity in New York called the Green Bronx Machine, which is, it's in a school in New York in the Bronx, but they have, you know, growing live gardens in the classroom, and they get the kids exposed to all types of growing projects around the city. And then, of course, eating the food they grow. And so it's just a great example of what we're trying to do. trying to support.
Everyone on this season specifically of the show is being asked the same question. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity. Let's talk a little bit about the pandemic.
Sure.
We were talking about resiliency earlier, so I was trying to find a way to pepper it in. But how did Eat the Change pivot and adapt? How did the last, you know, year and a half plus affect your company?
Well, we certainly had to develop more. You know, what happened is people were going much less into stores. And then, you know, and for us, the key with a business like ours, when we are launching a product people haven't tasted before, you have to make sure they get a chance to taste it. And so we couldn't do these demos the way we used to do, the sampling demos. And so we found a way. We first found these little bags. We were able to put very small pieces of jerky in and give those out. And of course, it was a little extra packaging, but it did enable people to be able to taste the product. So that was really useful. And then, of course, we had to develop much more of an online presence. And that was something that we, you know, we were thinking more retail, but we just said we can't just be in stores, because physically, if people aren't going to stores, we've got to be able to, you know, meet them where they are. And so in this case, it meant online and, of course, relying more on social media as a way to connect with people and to build a community of people. So that those were some things as well.
It's fascinating because, you know, once we got past the, like, everyone baking sourdough and banana bread and feta pasta, I think a lot of people were like, oh, crap, like, I really need to now take a look at my diet. I certainly know that in my house, that's when we started to, you know, eat a little bit more plant-based. Obviously, I've been working on the food waste issue in my house for years. That's, you know, the reason why we started this podcast. But I want to know, what advice would you give our listeners, people who are starting to try to live more sustainably but may not know where to start?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is the case that, you know, you don't have to... Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Just try, give it a try. So, you know, so, and Beyond Meat is a great example of something where you could basically just, you know, let's say it's taco night or burger night, just try putting Beyond Meat in there instead. And use the exact same recipe. You know, these types of things can be done very easily if you just take that step. It's literally a switch that easy. So I think it can feel really imposing or intimidating. People think they have to know special recipes or they have to know special cooking methods, and they don't. And certainly when we've served things like Beyond Meat to friends, they often don't know until later. You know, we'll sort of mention it, by the way, this is what you ate. And they, oh, wow, I had no idea. And of course, it's the same with jerky. If you're going to be eating a jerky, just try, you know, a plant-based one. That's all, you know, it's just the switch is that easy. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. And I think uncomplicating these things is a good way to make it, is, you know, much more accessible.
Okay, Seth, before I let you get back to smoking your mushrooms, that doesn't sound right. I did want to play our rapid fire game with you.
I'm
going to fire off 10 quick questions and you just say the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's go. What does a typical Saturday look like for you?
Usually some kind of exercise in the morning, whether it's a run or a bike ride, and then a little more slow pace. I'll often do like a crossword puzzle or a Sudoku, a hard one, you know, and spend time on it and really, you know, stick at it. Because like the Saturday Sudoku is often the hardest one, but I'll just, even if I sort of don't get it right the first time, then I'll actually redraw the grid and keep going until I get it. And you know, it could take hours for me, but I don't mind, you know, just sort of really sort of digging through it and working hard at a challenge like that.
What is one item that you don't leave your house without?
I guess, well, my bike. I bike to work. I bike to do errands. So if I'm leaving the house, I'll take the bike.
What are you reading right now?
Oh my goodness. I just have been reading the book it's called Love is Free, Guac is Extra. It's by the Monty Moran, who is the CEO of Chipotle. And I've really been enjoying it. A lot of lessons that are applicable around leadership, also around running a restaurant, which we're doing at Planet Burger.
What is one piece of advice you heard in your life or career that just really stuck with you?
I was in I worked on campaigns. And in the 1988 presidential campaign, I was doing advance work. And I was just running around a lot and really would get in a huge sweat. And somebody it said, hey, you know, you can do the same work you're doing, but just don't feel the stress. Don't sort of get into a panic mode. Just relax a little. And I realized that I could do all the same things, but just sort of keep it a little, just a little more of a mindset of just like, okay, I've gotten control. I don't need to panic. I can just do this calmly.
What's your go-to order at Planet Burger?
Oh my gosh. I'm glad you're asking this to everybody, by the way. I think I'm a real fan of the steakhouse burger. It's got this really nice horseradish sauce and these crispy potato, we call them like straws, that just, they blend together so well. So I get that every time I go.
What's one staple that's always in your fridge?
I guess now, you know, it's funny. I didn't initially like soy milk, but we went vegan about 2 years ago now. And then we needed, you know, so we swapped out all the animal-based milk. And so switching over to soy milk now has actually become something that I've found, I enjoy it. Sometimes I'll put chocolate in it and I'll also, you know, have it with cereal and that kind of thing. So now I guess it's soy milk.
What was your first job ever?
Well, really, before I was even, you know, of legal hiring age, I used to sell golf balls. We lived not too far from a golf course when I was growing up in Wellesley, Massachusetts, and I would find all the stray golf balls and sell them back to the golfers. And it was good because I had a good margin. There was zero cost of goods, and I would throw in lemonade as well. So it was my early trial in the beverage industry. And it was an entrepreneurial undertaking, and we used to, you know, be able to make, you know, $7 on a weekend day. And that was good money back then.
That leads me right into my next question. What is one piece of advice that you'd give to an aspiring entrepreneur?
Two things. One is do try selling, like find a way to sell something, because that's critical. You have to be able to be comfortable selling and have to be able to get comfortable not succeeding in selling, because that's part of the sales process as well. So try selling anything and make sure you're comfortable with that. And then if you're in business school or college, try a business plan writing course. You know, find a way to write a business plan, present it, and present it to people and get them interested in it. That's really important in terms of being able to just think through the entire business and make sure you're comfortable with that process.
What is your favorite vegetable?
Oh my goodness. So our office is right above a sweet green. And so I always get the spicy broccoli. I love that. But I also like some of the more less familiar vegetables. So I really like okra. That's something that I really enjoy, especially in Indian food. And we tried growing okra in our backyard this year. It hasn't gone that well. I'm not nearly as good a gardener, which helps me appreciate the work our farmers do. And then even though technically mushrooms aren't vegetables, but these maitake mushrooms we've been getting from our mushroom farm. When you grill those up, those are just amazing. That's probably my favorite food if it's cooked right.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
It means being able to wake up every day and feel like I'm doing work I believe in. And so, and not just I believe in, but I'm actually making an impact on the issues I care about. And, you know, it was nice that Honest Tea got to the scale where we could really make significant inroads on it, or for organics. You know, for millions of people, Honest Kids is the first organic product they will consume or be exposed to. And then, of course, that less sweet taste profile really helps shift people's palates. And so, you know, with Beyond Meat, of course, scaling that business and making it so globally available has been exciting. And, you know, now we're back to the drawing board with Eat the Change. We're just getting started and we have a long way to go, but I'm excited to be involved in that work as well.
Well, we're certainly excited to watch the journey. I mean, you've propelled some huge brands in the sustainability and food waste space, and we are so lucky to have an industry influencer like you fighting the good fight against food waste. So thank you so much, Seth, for sharing your experience with all of us. This was awesome.
Great. Well, thanks, Amy. Great to talk with you. And, you know, we need all the help we can get. Our food system is so challenged that there's opportunities for literally millions of people to get involved, and I hope they will.
That's my hope, too.